WKGN Knoxville and W289CU Knoxville. Fan Run Radio.
At Wholesale Supply, we're more than just a plumbing, electrical, and HVAC supplier. We're your partners in success. Join our family of customers today and experience the benefits of partnering with us. Enjoy free local delivery so you can focus on what you do best, getting the job done. With wholesale pricing, you'll save big on every purchase. Plus, our fast, friendly support team is here to assist you every step of the way. Our vast selection from top manufacturers ensures you'll find everything you need all under one roof. To find a location near you, visit wholesalesupply.us for more. And remember, Wholesale Supply, open to the public.
Time to get up, get out of bed, fill your cup and get ahead with WKGN. 1-3-4-0.
Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios in Knoxville, it's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Here are your hosts, John Reed and Bob Baskerville.
Back in the booth, back on the airwaves, coming at you live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Happy Monday morning to you. Monday, May 6th. John Reed, Bob Baskerville, Sam Beard, intern Jace. It's a packed house. Bob, how are you this morning, my friend?
Good morning. I'm good. Almost through this crud I had Thursday and Friday. Feeling better. Doing good. Good weekend. How about you?
Well, I'm sad to hear you're still dealing with your crud. I'd hoped you had it shaken off. I'd been worried about you all weekend. Just wondering if you were going to be okay. I saw you Saturday morning. I was hoping you had sweated out. I was hoping that you had knocked it out, got the sinuses going. But no, I still hear it a little bit.
Yeah, I'm in the last phase, though. I mean, I feel fine, doing all right, just a little bit congestion. I'm over it. But I appreciate the kind thoughts.
Yeah. Hopefully by Wednesday, you'll be as good as ever. Sam, happy Monday morning to you. Top of the morning to you.
Good morning. How are we doing?
I'm feeling pretty good.
Good.
Nothing to complain about. I was up probably the latest maybe I'd been since we switched over to the morning show.
Really?
Yeah, or about the latest.
What time was that?
Last I looked at my phone, it was 1:31. I picked it up because that was about 30 minutes into like not falling asleep, and I picked up my phone. I was like, oh my God, I gotta fall asleep. But then I woke up and felt pretty good, so I feel like 4 hours is kind of the sweet spot where you get through two REM cycles and you're up. I was up watching the damn Tom Brady roast last night, and I made the mistake of starting it at like 10 o'clock, and I didn't realize how long it was. And then about 12:45 rolled around, it was still going, and I was like, well, I got to finish it now to see what Brady says. And 1:15, you know, I feel like I turned it off, and it was late.
Yeah.
It was late.
Yeah.
On a day where, like, sports, you know, game 7 was over by, you know, 3 o'clock, 3:30. No Tennessee baseball on Sunday. It should have been a day that I was, you know, able to go to bed earlier, but that wasn't the case because Tom Brady and Netflix. Did you watch any of it, Bob?
I watched all of it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Sam?
Yeah.
All of it, too?
I was locked in.
Okay.
Right at 8.
So that makes just the fact that the three of us watched it. Now, did you watch it for the show or did you, like, for the morning show just to discuss and be in the loop? Or did you watch it because it interested you?
I was just watching it because I was interested.
And Bob?
I like comedy.
Probably a little bit of both. I just figured I figured it was going to be something people were going to be talking about. And sure enough, I mean, it's blowing up everywhere. Social media, morning sports talk radio across the country. Because it involves the GOAT, you know. And I'm just stunned he was willing. I'd love to know how much money he made to do this.
It seems like a weird choice. Like, there are certain times when, like, because I watched it too, and I agree with Bob, it was partly because of fear of missing out on the conversation, feeling like I needed to know about it for the show, but also because I like Rose and I like comedy, like you said, Sam. But yeah, there were a couple times throughout I was like, why are they doing this? Like, why are these people up here just being attached to these jokes? I'm not PC police, especially when it comes to comedy. Like, you know, last week I was saying, I think I'm fine with anything going in comedy and like rap beefs. Like, say whatever you want. I think just, you know, we'll give you different rules as far as political correctness goes. But it was weird seeing Bill Belichick attached to like the homophobic gay jokes. Like, him not necessarily saying them, but being attached to him and just sitting there kind of laughing at him. I was like, that's a weird choice for Tom Brady to be attached to him as he's like getting started in his $375 million TV role. Not saying like, oh my God, I can't believe it, but I'm just like, this seems odd, like odd career choices. Like, Peyton didn't go to that route. Peyton was polished enough when he came out. He kept it relatively PG, PG-13, honestly, whereas everyone else was kind of rolling around in the R rating.
I was going to say, he might have been, I can't recall if Belichick threw out an obscenity, but Peyton, I thought, might have been the only one who didn't. Do you remember Belichick doing one?
I don't really remember Belichick doing one, no.
No, but like Belichick, see, Peyton was only there for his walkout.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then, you know, shook hands with Brady and Kraft and Belichick and then left. So he wasn't out there seeing, like, laughing at the jokes, which Belichick was. So, like, I'm saying, like, here's Gronk saying something really crude and here's Belichick, ha, ha, ha. So, like, just caught on camera, you know, being attached to it, whereas Peyton was in and out. I'm going to do my thing. And also didn't think Peyton was very funny either. Like, I thought it was kind of a waste of time for Peyton to come out there. I get he needed to be there for his friend and it, you know, hit a little differently to maybe give Brady some material to ease into, because Brady started by talking about Peyton and kind of, you know, him being in Brady's shadow and all those things. But I thought from Peyton's comedy standpoint, it was kind of a waste of time.
I feel like it could have been, like, two or three people shorter.
Oh, for sure.
Like, they just kind of overdid it at some points, but some of them were, like, absolutely hysterical.
No, I thought it was really good. I do agree that it was a little long, but at the same time, then at the end of, like, the end of the show, they flash, like, Shane Gillis in the crowd. He's just wearing, like, a Nike, like, hoodie.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
Is he mad that he wasn't included in this? Like, I was like, he's been out here the whole time. He's probably like, I could do better than that.
Yeah.
Like, Dana White got more run than Shane Gillis, who, you know, was at least on the outer cusp of being, you know, one of the most relevant stand-up comedians, if he isn't already. But, no, I thought some stuff was really funny. I thought there were a couple of real star-making things, or at least mainstream, have people talking about them. I thought the comedians on there were really good. I could have done without Will Ferrell as Ron Burgundy. I thought that was a flop.
Yeah, that was a flop for sure.
I wonder if Will Ferrell knew he was flopping when he was up there.
I think he kind of did.
Yeah.
You could see, like, did you see some of the people in the background? I don't know who they were. It was the way the angle was. It wasn't on Brady's side. It was whoever was sitting behind the comedians, I guess. And they were stoic during Ferrell's bit. I mean, they no expression at all. Just like, you could tell it wasn't working for them.
I'm not a huge Will Ferrell person, especially like the Anchorman Will Ferrell. I think he's better kind of just as a supporting actor. I've always kind of felt that way. Like, he's good when he's not your main person. But I thought he was really cringy last night. I thought it was bad. I thought it was the worst part of the roast.
I didn't like Kevin Hart, honestly.
Okay. They're kind of in the same vein, I think. But I thought Kevin Hart was pretty good. I didn't mind him.
They just kept showing him, like, standing up at every joke that got delivered, like, standing in front of Brady. I was like, dude, this isn't your roast, you know? Like, he felt like he was dominating the show a little bit at times. But, I mean, I guess he was the host of it, too.
He was the host, and he was, I guess, the one that was kind of – I was glad it was him instead of Jeff Ross, though.
It's fair.
I feel like in those roasts, typically, like, it's kind of Jeff Ross that does that. And I was happy to not have more Jeff Ross. Kevin Hart, I know, like, at a certain point, 4 or 5 years ago, hit the tipping point where, like, okay, we've had enough of you. And he's only gotten more and more famous over those last 4 or 5 years. I wonder, like, I found myself during the show wondering if they had a rule that the comedians couldn't make fun of him and talk about Cat Williams. Because I was waiting for somebody to reference that. Like, you know, they had the Robert Kraft massage joke, which led to a very awkward moment at the beginning where I don't know if that was, like, Brady trying to be funny.
I feel like that was part of it, almost.
You think so? You know what we're talking about, Bob? Robert Kraft.
Oh, no,
Kraft.
I saw it. It was like his Will Smith moment. It was weird. I thought he was serious.
Yeah, he made a joke about Robert Kraft. Jeff Ross made a joke about Robert Kraft and massages. And Brady got up in the middle of it, went and got in his ear and said, "Don't say that bleep again." Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, Jeff Ross kind of went over it, I guess, to make sure that, like, you know, he was okay. At least that's what Kevin Hart said. Jeff Ross kept rolling right through and didn't, like, get bothered by it. So, I mean, he's a professional, but that part was awkward, but everything else I thought was pretty smooth. But I would like to know, yeah, like, was Brady, like, actually really mad and they had a rule? Because nobody else really talked about Kraft. And then, yeah, no one really gave it to Kevin Hart over the Cat Williams stuff. So I think that was probably put into the do not touch list.
Yeah, I think there were parts for Brady I was thinking about that were in the do not touch. There were no mentions of Brady's family whatsoever, not his kids, not his parents.
Oh, no, they talked about his kids a lot.
They did?
Well, like, not about, like, kissing his kids on the mouth, but talked about – there were many references to Brady, like, losing his family. Like,
Okay. I'm saying not specifically his
Kids.
Yeah.
I guess they could have said something about him kissing him on the mouth or whatever. But
something about that.
No, they – especially at the beginning rode hard about Brady, like, throwing away his family.
Yeah.
And, like, at that point, he said something about that that's bleeped up or something, like, under his breath, like – throwing away his family to go 8-9, I think is the joke was. When you can throw it all away to go 8-9 in Tampa Bay, you got to do it.
I thought the thing with Kraft might have been, I just think, you know, if you saw, you know, Kraft was trembly and everything. I just think Brady might have been doing that out of respect to Kraft. Like, man, just, you know, that guy's kind of in the last chapter of his, you know, just leave him alone. I don't think it was a bit. I think he was actually telling Jeff Ross to, come on, stop. It's too early, man.
Kraft was laughing. I mean, Kraft seemed to be a good sport about it. And, like, when he got the mic, you know, he made a joke about Vladimir Putin having a Super Bowl ring. Yeah. And Kevin Hart got them on stage to do a toast, to bury the hatchet, I guess, between Belichick and Kraft. I thought the comedians were good. I thought Tony from Kill Tony, thought that was the first time I think I'd really seen him.
He was good.
Do anything. I thought he was pretty good.
I've actually spent some time with Bert Kreischer and him. And
you spent time with him?
Oh, yeah.
Is he annoying in real life as he is when he has a microphone?
He's a good dude.
I hate Bert.
I'm not a big Bert guy either.
Oh, see, I actually enjoyed him and Segura, but he did a show for the Travel Channel where he just went around to amusement parks, and it was really before he broke out as a comic. But, yeah, I know he's not for everybody. I loved what Nikki Glaser said about him. She goes, he takes his shirt off. He goes, you know, people keep their shirts on.
Yeah. She was good. I thought Nikki Glaser was the highlight of the first, like, hour and a half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was
good.
I thought Andrew Schultz, that was somebody else I also wasn't really familiar with. I'd seen his face, but I hadn't really heard him. I thought he was pretty good. I thought Tony was good. I thought Sam J was good. The black lesbian comic that was talking graphically about having sex with Tom Brady. I thought that was a funny bit. Tom Brady seemed to enjoy her the most, I think, in terms of her comedy. I thought the players were all bad, though. I understood why they had to have them, but I thought Edelman was good. I didn't like his jokes. Like, I thought he controlled the room. I thought, like, he had been waiting for this moment, but, like, his jokes didn't hit for me.
He was pushing the line for sure.
Right. Like, this didn't land for me. I thought he was good on the mic, though, yes, but Randy Moss was terrible.
Terrible.
They should have kept him off. Like,
that's the one I missed, actually. I kind of took a break on Moss.
No, he was bad. He was bad, and the delivery is bad. And it was like that cringy feeling it gives me, like when I'm watching people try to be funny and they're not funny. And I almost turned it off at that point. I was like, no, I'm going to power through.
Bledsoe? I thought he was decent.
No, Bledsoe was good. Yeah, I was thinking of the Patriots guy.
He was better than I thought he was going
to
be.
I didn't like Gronkowski either. Like, Gronkowski, at that point, I was ready for it to be over. So, like, his 15 minutes of jokes just kind of didn't hit for me. I think if they had gone earlier in the show, maybe I would have liked it more. But at that point, I was like, okay, let's wrap it up. Let's go, Gronk.
Nikki Glaser's joke about Brady investing in the crypto and being like, even Gronk isn't that dumb to be like, oh, no, me no fake money.
Yeah, that was one of the highlights of the night for sure.
Yeah.
That was one of the highlights for sure.
Brady had a great line on Sam J where he said, he goes, I'm not going to say anything about you. He goes, because you remind me of the dude that tore my ACL.
Yeah.
It was good.
Brady, you know, admitted, air quotes, to deflating footballs, which I think some people are running with just the headline of him saying the NFL could have just given him $20 million. And he would have admitted that he, you know, did it. But I don't know if that was actually an admission or him just saying, hey, I would have taken the $20 million and this is a roast. Dunked on, you know, some fan bases, which I thought was an interesting wrinkle for somebody that's getting ready to get on TV. Like, you know, but it's a roast.
What was the last roast we've had? I feel like we haven't had one of those in a long time.
No, we haven't.
Last one I watched, it's been a couple of years, was Rob Lowe.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't recall any for an athlete. You know, I mean, I thought that was the first one I think I've seen.
That was like a hot thing on TV for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I used to love watching them.
Yeah, it was, but yeah, that was my first exposure to Schultz. I didn't know what to expect. I just kept seeing the shots of him with that haircut he's got. It's creepy looking, but he was good. He was good. It was, hey man, that's, I try to think about what the end game is for Netflix on this. Obviously, it's another live event for them that they do. I'm sure, you know, I could see when I was, because I came on a little bit late. So when I was logging on, it took a while for it to buffer, which told me, okay, they got a lot of traffic on this, man. There's a lot of people watching. So for them, it's one that helps them stand out again from a buzz perspective. It was, and people will be talking about it all day today for sure.
And they also had the Cat Williams thing on Saturday night, which I don't think was received very well, but they were trying to run out two live events. They had John Mulaney, mm-hmm. Earlier this weekend too. Maybe it was Thursday that they did some type of series for him. So yeah, Netflix Live was really trying to make it their weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alec Baldwin in 2019 was the last roast. They kind of fizzled out. They had the Bieber one that was just kind of awkward.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then went Rob Lowe, Bruce Willis, who wasn't like, you know, at that point I think already kind of deteriorating, and Alec Baldwin, so James Franco before that, it kind of started teetering out and kind of burning out a little bit. So it was nice to kind of go away. Well, that was my weekend. Hope you guys had a good one.
We had a workout. That was good.
We did get a workout.
Yeah, how was that?
I realized I was out of shape. Like, I already kind of knew I was out of shape. But like,
I mean, you're sitting in a sauna working out.
Yeah, no. Thank you. I appreciate that. You're trying to be like, hey, what happened to anybody? But no, like by the second pose, it's like, oh my God, like just getting in there and like planking. And like, I was just, yeah, the warm up was just like you're touching your toes and like grinding, you know, going down into like a dog position and like coming back up. And then like by the second one, I was already really breathing hard. So no, it was not just a normal thing. I need to start really taking care of the cardio.
Yoga's hard. Is that what it was? Like yoga kind of?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
That's hard.
That's what I was doing.
I did the cycling in a sauna, basically.
And then me and Bob and
Better
Logan.
Worse than your normal cycling?
They only did 15 minute sessions. Okay. And the first I did, because I cycle and I do classes. So I was like, yeah, let me try two, because I usually do at least 30 minutes. 15 I blew through, 30 by the end it was the heat more than anything. Yeah, it's like I usually have a fan on me when I do cycling, so it was polar opposite. So.
But then me, Bob, and Logan broke bread and ate breakfast together.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Nice little Sunday, Saturday morning.
High-fived nice. At the end.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. He even offered me a shirt. I didn't take it. I ended up having the next one, but he was offering me a shirt. I was like, Bob's going to put me in his clothes. Because like they're like, you want to get breakfast? I was like, no, I'm sweaty. I was like, I don't want to go in there. And like, well, just change your shirt. I was like, okay. At first, like, oh, no, it's fine. Like, well, you maybe should change your shirt. If you go in there. I was like, all right, fine. I was like, I don't think I have any. I didn't plan for any. But luckily, I had my kickball shirt in the bag I could throw on.
Game worn?
Yeah, it was. But not, you know, you don't sweat too much just running around playing kickball. But, yeah, it was better than the sweat I had on. I ate some biscuits and gravy with Bob.
Pretty good.
It was good.
Jace, thumbs up, thumbs down. How are you? Thumbs up from Jace. Love to see it. Great opening segment by you. We'll catch a break. We'll get Bob's story of the day coming out of the weekend. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Cruising down the street in my 6-4. Blowing Kush smoke out the window. Right. Pockets full of hunnids, no singles. All right, Bob, what is the story? The biggest story in sports here in Knoxville on this Monday morning.
I think it has to be that baseball series with the Vols. If you think about, we talked about it on Friday. They had the doubleheader. He had to go in, and at a minimum, we felt it was important. They win that series. Sweeping would be great, of course, but we're realistic. Could not go 1-2. Really felt that was critical, and they didn't. And it was kind of a ran the gamut in terms of what kind of games they were, if you think about the games on Friday and then what the game on Saturday became. So, yeah, I think to me that was super important. If you also factor in what happened around the conference with some of the other teams on top, with Texas A&M and Arkansas.
Yeah, it's funny you say that it was kind of running the gambit of emotions and types of games, because, yeah, on game one on Friday, you had just A.J. Causey kind of putting the team on his back, it felt like. Just having a dominant pitching performance, really getting in a groove. And Tennessee's offense wasn't great in that game one, but it did enough, you know, as he held them down. Game two was frustrating. Game two was frustrating. You had a couple of defensive lapses. You couldn't quite come through in the ninth inning. You gave it a run. You made them sweat. But you didn't come through in the clutch. And then game three, you fell behind, much like you did in game two. But then the offense woke up, started grinding, and then, yeah, just absolutely exploded in the sixth inning. 11 runs. I believe it was, what, 5 straight hits to start the inning before giving up an out? And then, yeah, then you had some two-out magic where you just kept going, going, going. You even had a 2-RBI strikeout for Kaveris Tierz as he strikes out. And then the Florida catcher with one of the worst throws you'll ever see. I still don't know what the hell happened there. As he threw the ball between the second baseman and first baseman. I don't think I've ever seen that on one of those throws. And, yeah, that allowed Tennessee to just keep it going. And then in the seventh inning, you had your two big boppers start big bopping again, with both Christian Moore and Blake Burke going back-to-back. So you come out of the weekend feeling really, really good about your offense. You come out feeling really good about your pitching, too. Like, that is the best 2-1 that maybe you could have when you look at the performance from Causey in Game 1 and then the offensive explosion in Game 3. And Drew Beam was the solid Drew Beam that he always is. Didn't get the win, but just eats up innings, allows you to have your full bullpen, basically, for game three. And then your bullpen did enough in game three to hold them down and keep you within distance until the offense woke up.
Now, I was thinking about Blake Burke on his home run. How about his bat toss? I loved it. Yeah. It was just so, like, business-like, man.
I prefer the Ken Griffey Jr. approach that he has on those home runs, where Griffey kind of had that same swing where he just connected and then the bat just immediately goes down.
Yeah.
And you're just like, that's even better than the cool bat flips. Like, I don't need this anymore. I'm done with you. Ball is going far. Bat going to the ground.
Now, I thought I agree with the pitching. Causey in game one on Friday looked great. Our guy Kirby pitched in both games on Friday. He's going to be joining us tomorrow, by the way.
Okay.
To preview the upcoming week. But, yeah, he looked good. And then, like you said, with Beam, nothing spectacular. I wish we could have gotten that Amick throwing error back. That one felt like it hurt a little bit. But still, all in all, the weekend was good. Nate Snead on Saturday, my gosh, looked solid. And like you were saying, John, really didn't have to go deep into the bullpen at all. So as far as various arms versus just sticking with one guy. So I felt it was a great weekend. God, I was trying to think, if you're a Florida fan, that had to be just incredibly painful to watch. You don't see many, every once in a while you do, but these double-digit innings, if you're on the other end of that, that's just got to be horrible.
I was watching that with some buddies, and one of my friends just, like, fell asleep at the start of the sixth inning and woke up still in the sixth inning. Yeah. Like, and he took, like, an hour-long nap.
I think 37 minutes was the official runtime of that inning, I think I saw, or the half inning.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
How many? There was some incredible, I forget the number now, how many pitches were thrown in that inning. It was like 70 or 80 pitches or something crazy. God, yeah, it was. That's boy, it's stating the obvious, but Tennessee offensively needed something like that too. They'd been kind of dry for a little bit by their standards, but it just reminded me, should remind all the fans of what can really happen with this team if they can just keep it dialed in with the bats.
I thought it was very important for Hunter Ensley too.
Oh,
just five RBI in the one half of the inning, seven RBI in the entire game. I think I'm gonna try to make that a thing instead of get RBIs. I think I'm going RBI.
I was just about to ask why you.
Yeah, I think I'm going with RBI. I wanted to try it out. It feels good. I'm going with RBI.
You're an innovator, man.
Because it's not run batted ins; it's runs batted in. So RBI. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah.
But yeah, he exploded. It was nice to see him kind of break out of his little bit of his slump and actually, you know, get some big time, just some power hits too. I mean, just crushing the ball. That felt good. The back half of the lineup.
I was really just about to say that. That whole back half got a better little bit of a confidence boost there. At the
back half of the lineup was awesome in game three, and you needed it because the top half of the lineup was not very good for most of that weekend. You had Christian Moore just roping singles. And really from game two and on, I should say, because Amick, I thought, had some good moments in game one. And I guess in game two, he hit the bomb too. So that was his only hit of the day, that game. But then I thought they kind of broke out of it late in the game, like I said, with Burke finally hitting a home run.
Curley had some timely hits too, I thought. I mean, they just all did. It was like you said, the back of the order, save Robin Villeneuve. He did not. We're just asking about him on Thursday, and it was like, man.
If you are looking for an area of concern, is it just like the DH spot right now? Because I know Tears DH'd in game three as he came back from his issue.
Yeah.
You had Backus come in, get one at bat, then get benched. I thought he got benched from his play in right field. He only got one at bat and then, you know, got sent to the bench, and some people were upset that he only got one at bat. But I had no problem with him getting benched because I thought that Tony held him responsible for that third run on the Amick throwing error. If you let a guy score from first base on a throwing error, like, that means something's gone wrong. And I didn't think the right fielder where he was playing got over there to back up the throw enough. I don't think he was hustling. Then he kind of fumbled the ball in the corner and let that run score. And I think Vitello kind of held him responsible for it, which I'm okay with. They made a big deal about that being his first SEC start. And I just feel like if you're Vitello, you got to send the message like, hey, if you're getting your first start, you should be busting your ass more than anybody on the field. You should be overeager, not late to doing little league things. Like, that was kind of unacceptable. And at the time, it made it 3-0, and you're worried about, you know, losing that series and losing that game.
Yeah, it still seems like they're rotating guys at that DH spot. They haven't really found anyone that's taken a hold of it as far as, like, the whole season. I thought at the start of the season, it really felt like Dalton Bargo was just going to take that over. But then, you know, we've talked about that a little bit with, you know, at the end of last week there. But with Bargo just kind of slumping recently.
At the beginning of the season, it felt like Bargo was going to bat 450 or so. Like, it felt like they couldn't get him out.
Exactly. He felt great. Felt like an amazing, amazing option at that DH spot. But now he's a little bit shaky. Reese Chapman is still kind of getting settled into. So, yeah, I mean, I still feel like you're kind of going through some guys that have some strikeout issues kind of at that DH spot, honestly.
That is that the biggest area of concern? Because for me it is. Just, like, it doesn't seem like anybody is playing well right now at that position. And maybe, you know, you give Backus another shot at it, and, you know, maybe he – makes up for it because he'd been hitting well coming into it, and that's why he got the start. But it's just, I thought his at-bat was fine. He struck out, but then the play in right field, because he had to be in there for Tears, I thought that was left something to be desired.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tennessee falls down to eighth in RPI even after the series win against Florida. Which is kind of funny just because you might come out of the week number one in the country. Maybe. Maybe. I think Arkansas will keep it. Or not Arkansas. I think they lost. They got killed by Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. They lost that series.
Yeah, and they got killed in game three. Like, but I still think maybe them or A&M stays ahead of you, but they both lost their weekend series. And A&M looked pretty shaky against LSU for most of that weekend.
I didn't see what Clemson did this weekend, but they might jump up too.
Sure. They were behind Tennessee coming into the week. Tennessee won their series but did lose to Lipscomb. But, yeah, maybe number one, maybe number two in the country, but still maybe kind of on that cutoff in terms of hosting a super regional or having that locked in. Mm-hmm. The good news is Tennessee wins the weekend series, and if you're looking at chasing an SEC championship, you're still within striking distance. You're still right there. Kentucky with an impressive weekend. I thought Kentucky was going to win that series against Arkansas, but they did. So now you are tied with Arkansas. You're a game ahead of A&M and a game behind Kentucky. You're right there. Sweep, you'd have been tied. I feel like you should have had the sweep, maybe. I don't think that Florida team is very good. I think they're very talented, but I don't think they're very good. But you can't be too mad about a series win on the road.
Feeling good about going into this week against Vandy. Vandy got swept by Georgia.
They seem dead. There's rumors coming out of Nashville that Corbin set for retirement at the end of the year.
Really?
That's what people are saying. I don't know if that's why the team feels like they've let go of the rope. I don't know if they're very good. I don't know if they've got caught cheating. You know, you had a coach in the SEC come out and say, hey, there's a team cheating right now. Just look at their home splits versus their road splits. They suck on the road, but all of a sudden they're pretty good at home. Something's going on there. And then from that moment too, like it seems like Vandy's kind of struggled from there as well. So Tennessee's won what, 7 in a row against Vandy, I believe is the number.
I think that's right.
You're headed to Nashville this weekend. It does definitely feel like two teams and two programs continuing to head in opposite directions. It's weird because the teams you just played and the team you're in line to play, Florida and Vandy, you kind of need them to suck against you, but then like get off the mat because they are the two teams that Kentucky plays. Kentucky, who you're chasing for the SEC championship, you're a game behind. They go to Gainesville this weekend and then finish the season against Vanderbilt. So like you need Vanderbilt to suck against Tennessee, but then be good against Kentucky, or you need Florida to go from getting embarrassed in game three against Tennessee to maybe at least taking one, if not two, at home against Kentucky. I thought that was an interesting wrinkle in your SEC championship chase.
Hey, we got to pay attention to Queens tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Got to win that one.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, got to win that one. That one's a big game now after the way that you played against Lipscomb last week. That's, you know, going to cost you. If you don't start this week ranked number one, it's because you lost to Lipscomb.
Yeah.
So like they maybe cost the number one ranking, which maybe you're okay with. You don't want to be the number one team, the number one curse, all those things. But, yeah, like you got to take care of business against Queens.
Where is Queens? North Carolina?
I think that is the school in Charlotte.
That's what I thought, but I just don't know much about them.
But I'm not exactly sure.
Trying to look them up, but their page just keeps buffering. Low-budget school.
Yeah, I can't imagine they're coming down from New York. I do believe it's North Carolina. I think we had this discussion. Yeah, I was going to say, I think we talked about this before. Next six SEC games, you're on the road against Vanderbilt. You end the season at South Carolina. I'll set the over-under at 4.5. 4.5, Sam, you going over or under?
I'll take the over.
Jace, 4.5, you going over or under?
I'll take the over. I think that they get 2 against Vanderbilt, and I wouldn't be surprised if they were to sweep South Carolina.
Okay. Bob, over under, 4.5?
Yeah, I'd go over. I'd go over. They understand the gravity of it all. I'd like to see them sweep Vanderbilt more than anything, but I don't know. Vandy might be a little desperate. It's a rival, and they just came off a sweep, so maybe 2 out of 3 might be what we have to settle for there.
Seems like Vandy fans a little fed up with the team, too. So, like, I'll be interested to see how much orange is in Nashville this weekend. Makes the trip over there, or is already over there and just, you know, pays the money to go on the road.
See how loud the Whistler is.
See how loud the Whistler is. I doubt he's giving up on the boys. But it's kind of crazy. I mean, it's just a testament to Vitello. Just that South Carolina, you know, had their two championships. Vandy's been the standard in the SEC for so long that you're ending the season against them, and we're looking at, yeah, 5 wins minimum. That's kind of where we're all at. Hey, maybe sweep both of them, but 5 wins minimum. You've passed it both as programs. And really, it's not even close at this point. Tony Vitello is the man. We all know that. But just, it still feels like we take him for granted at times. Boys are playing good ball, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Third best odds to win the national championship right now. Still behind Arkansas and A&M. Last I checked, Tennessee 9-1. A&M's 5-1. Arkansas 6-1. Which I think is a good number.
Mm-hmm. No problem with that.
I think you got better pitching than A&M, and you got better hitting than Arkansas. So I do think of those three teams, you're maybe the most well-rounded. And you're getting A.J. Russell back, maybe as soon as this weekend. That'll be another arm you could throw out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
If he can give you what we think he can, then that's obviously a huge deal.
If he can go give you that performance that Nate Snead gave you on Saturday, that's the type of role I think you're hoping for with him coming back from that injury.
Do you know what Seed's numbers were off the top of your head?
I want to say he went like 6, maybe.
Because I was going to say, my expectations for Russell are even lower than that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would say that would be like best case scenario.
He went 5.
I want to see Russell just give me 3 innings, maybe. Like, just be a starter. Be a guy that get the ball rolling in like a tournament game. And like, you know, because I think Tennessee is going to just, you know, match arms out of the bullpen. You know, ideally, you have your game one set up. That's been working for you. Game three, Snead's kind of been that guy for you. But I do think you're going to need, like, a fourth option. And maybe Russell's that guy that can get you started and get you to the bullpen. He could also be a guy, you know, in down the stretch that could maybe give you a couple innings, you know, in these games against South Carolina and Vandy out of the bullpen, too. The pitching staff, I feel pretty good about them, you know, considering especially where we felt, you know, coming out of the Alabama series. I mean, where you're freaking out that you didn't have enough arms in the bullpen. Turns out Frank Anderson is going to maximize his pitchers by the end of the year. He's really, really good. Any other baseball thoughts for now?
No, I don't think so.
Sam? Jace?
I think we're good.
All right. Game back. Hopefully we can track down Kentucky. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that...
Coming out of the weekend, the other sports we were paying attention to the most, the NBA playoffs, as the second round now officially here, got started on Saturday night with an absolute banger of a game as the Timberwolves beat the Nuggets. To me, that was the biggest takeaway from the basketball weekend.
Yeah, I would say that was a statement game from Minnesota. I mean, they're clearly showing that they belong. What a game, man. I'm now of the mind that those might be the two best teams in the league at this point. I really feel that way with all due respect to Boston and the Knicks. I just think the winner of that series could end up – I could see them winning it all, really.
I think both of those teams are really, really good. I'm not going to say that they're both better than Boston. They might be, but I think Boston's on that level. And I thought that going into the series that Minnesota was a bad matchup for Denver. Denver, I think, was like minus 200, where Minnesota was like plus 170. I liked Minnesota's number there. They just had to win three games to cover the series spread, too. Like, to me, at least it's a seven-game series if Minnesota loses. But after watching game one, I feel like Minnesota just is the perfectly wrong matchup for Denver. I don't think that Jamal Murray is going to do what he did against the Lakers. The Lakers didn't have anybody that could stop Murray. I think Minnesota's got two really good defenders they could throw at him. You saw Murray struggle in the first half. He was scoreless. Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards could just take turns making his life hell. Then in the post, you have 3 7-footers, basically, that can rotate in just to have size on Jokic, especially if Towns can stay out of foul trouble. You put Towns on Jokic, then kind of have Rudy Gobert just as that free safety making life, you know, hell for everything else. And Denver doesn't have really anything they can do chess-wise because Aaron Gordon just kind of hangs out the three-point line, so Gobert doesn't really have to guard him. Like, hey, good luck, Aaron Gordon. Just shoot a bunch of open threes, and maybe you can win that way. But he's not a good shooter, and that doesn't seem to be a good way for them to run offense. So I do think Denver just kind of up against the wall here matchup-wise, especially if Anthony Edwards is going to play like young Kobe, young Michael Jordan, and just be out there and be the best player on the court, even with a team that has Nikola Jokic on the other side. Anthony Edwards is still the best player on the court, and that was crazy seeing.
Yeah, you bring up the whole situation for Jokic having to deal with all those bigs. I mean, his line was a typical Jokic, 32, 8, and 9, but what I saw was he had to work his ass off to get all of that, and I just don't know if that's sustainable for a whole series. Minnesota's going to just keep throwing that at him, I think, or they should. And, so I agree. I think the matchups are just not favorable at all for Denver. Doesn't mean Denver can't win some games in this, but, boy, I feel very different about Minnesota at the moment, and it's largely in part to Anthony Edwards. I mean, my gosh, what else can you say about him? I mean, dude is just absolutely elite. You could argue he is fast emerging as kind of the face of the game. I really believe that at this point. It's moving that quickly.
We've been waiting for the next great American basketball star to kind of transition to as Curry and LeBron fade out. I've been saying for years it's going to be Anthony Edwards. I feel vindicated. As he has, kind of just taken that throne. Did you see the list? Did you see the list of players that have scored 35 straight in three straight playoff games at age 22 or younger?
I did not see that.
Have you seen it, Sam?
Yeah.
There have been four players that have scored 35 points or more in three straight playoff games at age 22 or younger, which is crazy. He's only 22.
I know.
Absolutely crazy. Anthony Edwards became the fourth person. The three other people, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, back when he was Lou Alcindor. So, like, basically four of the top 10 players of all time. And you could put Kobe in the top six and make it four top six players if you really want to. Jordan, of course, is in college for 3 years, so he couldn't do that at that age. But that's what air we're in with Anthony Edwards right now.
You had the announcers even being like, man, that looks like somebody I know.
Reggie was saying that.
Like, man, it looks like Michael.
Well, I mean, like, he has that same mid-range game.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, not too many people at that size have had the just, hey, I'm going to just kind of have that mid-post fadeaway game or just kind of hit these pull-up mid-range jumpers just over and over and over. And he was nails in those in game one and, you know, was in the entire Phoenix series too. So, yeah, no, he is wired like Kobe and Jordan from that perspective, and he has that same defensive tenacity too. He's a top player in the league and is ascending right before our eyes. How far can he go? How far can he carry them? Can he have a 2007 LeBron James finals breakthrough? Can he have, you know, the Bulls when they slayed the Pistons in 91, I believe, when they swept them and kind of ended their reign? Can he have that type of series right now? Dwayne Wade carrying the Heat to the finals? Maybe. Maybe. They've yet to lose. They're 5-0. To me, they're, you know, they've been the story of the playoffs.
Yeah, and you just touched on something that I think is what separates him as, again, that elite level is what Heat can do. He can affect the game defensively, too. We've seen it. Some of the biggest highlight plays of the entire season defensively have come from him. There's no real gaps in his game at the moment, Moon. I mean, there's nothing he needs to work on. He's just, it's like, let that guy ride. It's incredible. And Minnesota just seem aligned too. This whole situation that's going on with Chris Finch, he's there, but he's sitting in the second row. This guy, they even asked Edwards that about, is it Micah Norry, I think is the name of the assistant who's kind of running point as the head coach on the floor at the moment. He was like, man, that's our guy. You know, he was like, there's nothing different. Finch is right there, you know, yelling. So, I mean, nothing seems to have them set back right now.
I think Anthony Edwards, the thing that has not been talked about enough is probably the playmaking that he's taken under two. Like, he's handling the ball a lot, and the double team's coming. He's making the right passes. He's not being too aggressive because, like, scoring 35 straight is impressive, but, like, sometimes guys can score against what's best for the team. They can force the issue. It hasn't felt like he's forced the issue. It feels like everything has been natural and free-flowing. And what you talked about with his defense, I do think we will head into next year talking about him as the best two-way player in the league. You know, outside of Jokic, especially if you're looking at just at wings, you'll be looking at him as the best two-way player in the league because he brings it on defense, and the offense, of course, is already there.
Yeah, he's just a joy to watch, too, man. That was just such a great playoff game, and for anybody who – we know there's some people who aren't NBA fans, it's like – if you watch NBA playoff ball in a game like that, that's about as good as it gets.
Well, if you need storylines to get involved, to get interested, like, to me, Minnesota has the best storyline. They're a franchise that's never really won. But also, like, as a fan base that's as petty as Tennessee is, like, I feel like Minnesota, man, they have to have a lot of receipts and a lot of bullets in the chamber because they were made fun of so much last year when they traded so many picks and so many players for Rudy Gobert. They got made fun of, worst trade ever. Last year they were a failure. Gobert wasn't very good. He was hurt, is what they're claiming. And this year they've come back and shown, like, yeah, this trade, this is why we made it. Carl Anthony Towns at the four. We made fun of him for a long time. He, you know, has called himself the best shooting big man ever. We made fun of him for that. We make fun of his sassiness. We make fun of Minnesota in general. Gobert, I thought, was awesome in game one. I thought he made two really big offensive plays and then had maybe one of the most impressive plays as he stopped Jokic and then broke up a pass as Jokic tried to throw his little alley-oop to Gordon. Gobert's been really, really good, and Gobert's been made fun of a lot. Minnesota's been made fun of for trading him. And if they get through Denver, it's already a success. But then, like, they'll look and they'll be favored probably over anybody they play in the Western Conference Finals, whether it be Dallas or Oklahoma City. And then you'll take your chance in the finals. But, yeah, Minnesota fans have to be loading up the petty chamber ready to go because they were made fun of so much last year.
Yeah. We haven't even talked about Naz Reid. I mean, my God, what a game for him, too. And then I was texting you guys because – I think it was last week I was saying I thought Malik Monk should have been sixth man of the year. I retract that. I mean, he made some grown man plays at the most clutch times in that game. Very impressed with him.
Yeah, he stunk in the first half, and he stunk for half of the third quarter. But then, yeah, when he got in the third quarter and, you know, kind of took over the game for stretches, and he was kind of the one that made you realize, okay, like, Minnesota's going to win this game, or at least is not going to get blown out. They're going to be right there because Naz Reid – just took off and banked in a three and then followed up with a nice putback jam and then a nice baseline and one. Like, he kind of took over the beginning of that fourth quarter and I think had 14 second half points, I believe. And, yeah, looked like a matchup problem for them, especially when you compare it to who Denver's bringing off the bench. Jokic is the only guy that has any size out there. They don't bring anybody with size off the bench. Their guys off the bench are all guards, basically.
I want to say Reed scored like 10 in a row at a really critical point of that game. I mean, that was impressive. But you're right about Denver. I think what we're seeing with Denver is there's just no depth, really. They've got some guard depth, but that's it.
They're going to have to dust off the carcass of DeAndre Jordan, yes. I think. And that's not a good place to be in the playoffs in 2024. Wrapping up hour one here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Boy, did I drink me some White Claw Hard Seltzer this weekend. Responsibly, of course. Appreciate them for their support. You can drink some White Claw Hard Seltzer, too. All you got to do is go to your local package store, your gas stations, go to bars, and order some White Claw Hard Seltzer. Support the people who support us. Black Cherry, still the goated flavor. Hour two coming at you. We'll kick it off with about last night. We'll catch up on some other stories from the weekend. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.